This is the BBC Home Service.
And it used to be so popular.
It is. And in 1954, it certainly was. Some of the popularity, it's true, has been transferred to BBC television. So that a part of the audience, once faithful to educating Archie and work at playtime, was now obsessed with Quatermass and What's My Line. But radio comedy was staging a magnificent fight back, with Archie Andrews' shows in particular claiming audiences sometimes in the 18 million range. And as the baby boom post-war children grew older, so the audience for the Goons grew, encouraging one another with playground imitations and the inevitable catchphrases.
Come in.
Captain Harry, he's room reporting for duty as instructed for. I'm ready to die for the flag, bleed for my country, suffer great suffering, and all for England!
You silly, twisted boy, you.
Even as Goonery was taking off in 1954, one of the Goon's contemporaries and friends was finding his radio voice. Tony Hancock was known from solo appearances and his tutorship of Archie Andrews, one of the best ever shop windows for radio comedy talent. Now, in the 1954 star bill, under the guidance of producer Dennis Mayne Wilson, he came together with two very young, very tall scriptwriters called Alan Simpson and Ray Galton. From the very start, they seemed to understand what he was about.
Well, not for me, for one more minute, sir.
Right, Ralph.
Have you finished knocking on the air?
Oh, what can I do for you?
Are you the manager?
Do I owe you money?
No.
Speak it.
My husband and I are down south on our holiday.
All of you, didn't you? Sunset. Oh, yes, I think we can accommodate you.
What are your terms?
Last year I got 6 months of birth. Oh, yes, terms. I'm at the skin you for terms, yes. Well, we normally charge you 6 dinners a week for a double room.
How about food?
So that's also it. A bit messy, but we haven't got any waiters. I expect you want to see your rooms. Are you fully insured?
Of course we are.
Yes, we'll take a chance of the lift here. So yes, we've got all the mod comms here, you know, usual offices. That's it. Pile in, close the gate. Oh, yes, that's it. Right. Now we'll be up there in no time. I'll just get it started. I have to start up the lift shaft for the engineer. Pardon me.
He is! Let it go!
That's right.
Ready? Pull! Put that!
Hancock with Maura Lister and Graham Stark in 54. And from that association with Galton and Simpson grew the tradition of Hancock's Half Hour, which only 2 years later was producing classics like this.
Hancock calling control tower. Everything out at 1,800 miles per hour. Everything going to plan. Fine plane, tell the designer Shepherd. Taking her up to 2,400 miles an hour. Hancock control tower. Something strange is happening. There's a peculiar knocking sound on the wind screen. Seems to be coming from outside the plane. I'm slowing down to 1,800 miles an hour. The side cockpit open to see what's wrong.
Good evening. It's an half cold here. You can't tell me.
What's that?
I say an half cold here. You can't come in.
That's no room. Get off.
Oh, don't be like that. Move over, I'll sit on your left.
Get your boot off these joysticks, do you know?
Two things about that. One was the extreme economy with the sound effects, compared not just with sound-fixated shows like The Goons, but even with the average radio play. There was no attempt to render the sound of aero engines or the rushing mighty wind of the jet stream. I don't remember anyone ever having complained that the sequence was, in radio jargon, underproduced. And secondly, how very funny Kenneth Williams was. Funny enough for it to be understandable that the star of the show eventually began to worry whether he was maximizing his own potential in it. He was, of course, but not only in measurable terms of laughter. Some of his function in the show was to provide its centre of gravity with that ridiculously self-important seriousness of his. He may have felt in the end that he was being bounced off too much and bouncing too little. But that was a problem mainly for his future in television. In radio days, he was still happily cocooned amid his supporting players. Even if the Anthony Aloysius St. John Hancock of the plot was cheesed off enough to want to leave the country.
There it is, Tim. I can't emigrate. 83 countries I've tried and none of them want me.
Leave it to me, Tony boy. Now, you give me 50 nickel for a passport.
I've already got a passport.
That's no good. You tried emigrating under your own name, didn't you? Use this passport. This will get you out.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Let's have a look. Harold McMillan. Harold McMillan? Who's he?
For very young listeners, he was the Prime Minister of the day. Pursuing the same plan, Hancock and Sid arrived at the airport.
Now listen. Trouble.
What?
The word's got round at your ear. Look. Waiting by the plane. Newspaper reporter. Come to trouble. Now, I know you acted like loading it up, but don't say one single word to him.
Oh, don't be so ridiculous. It's obvious why they're here. They've seen through me disguised.
Do me a favor.
They recognize me.
Of course, I must speak to them.
Look, I know not every day England's greatest comic leaves the country for good. They've got a duty to their public. One of the penalties of fame.
Do me a favor.
Come, William, our final press conference in England.
There he is. That's him, the Foreign Minister.
Yeah, that's him, all right. Something big must be on. Secret meeting in Washington.
He's not supposed to meet Ike till next month.
Oh, hold it, sir. Could we ask a few questions?
Certainly, my good man. Far away, as I believe they say in your country.
Are you going to America for some more money, sir?
So far I am, on the mug. I know which side of the Atlantic my bread's buttered on.
Can you tell us specifically why you are going to America?
Yes, I can. I'm glad you asked that. Because I'm fed up with this country. I'm getting out. I advise you to do the same. You haven't got a chance here. Not a chance. You haven't got a chance of getting on unless you've got to work.
Sir, how long will you be staying in America?
For good. I'm not coming back here. You're not coming back. Does the government know about this, sir?
I don't suppose so. What's it got to do with them?
They won't even miss me.
But if you're not coming back, who will be taking your place as number one?
Oh, there's plenty of good lads coming up, you know.
Well, here I is a bit of a sickly officer's record. Jimmy Edwards is the one, I think.
Gee, I gotta get to a phone.
Jimmy Edwards was a failed Tory candidate around that time. And in his hit show, too, the subject of emigration had been broached. In Take It From Here, the Glums had become a wildly popular fixture, with the cretinous Ron unable to consummate any scheme at all, least of all his engagement to Ed. Here the proposal is that Ron should take up a new life in Australia, an idea given an added dimension of absurdity by the fact that Dick Bentley patently came from there in the first place.
Dad! What's up? Come in!
Ron, I wish you wouldn't shout while I'm cutting your mother's corn. Now then, where's the idea? Oh.
Don't chide, Ron, Mr. Glum. He may not be with you much.
Eh?
Oh, you tell him, Ron.
There. I'm going to settle down where the pencil goes in.
You're going to... Hey, what?
Yeah.
What?
He's going to emigrate to Australia, Mr. Brown.
What? Ron, you can't do that. Your mum's cooking the supper.
Not doing right now, Mr. Brown. Next Tuesday, he said. Oh, Mr. Brown, is he doing the right thing?
I don't know if I don't know. But I'll tell you this, Ron. I will say. Old England has still got a lot to offer. Lots. Look out the window, my baby boy. Everything you see out there is mine.
I thought the red ones were mum.
Yes, there was a Mrs. Glum, although she never appeared. She was the original, her indoors, or upstairs, usually. on extremely rare occasions she was heard from, as in this early instance.
Mama! Mama, I'm taking you away for a week's holiday!
Well, perhaps it wasn't quite the right moment to give her a sudden surprise. I just remembered where she was.
Where, Mr. Plum?
Getting the mangle down from the loft.
Now, I'm almost certain that it was the singer Alma Cogan who provided those terrifying vocal hints at the never-revealed character of Mrs. Plum. Perhaps the nearest thing to the well-scrubbed modern sitcom family of today were the Lyons, formerly represented in High Gang, but now showcased in the very long-running Life with the Lyons.
It's real, it's real, funny, isn't it, Mrs. Lyons?
Yes, it takes me back to my childhood.
Oh, I used to celebrate with you, little real estate, Mrs. Lyons.
Oh, I used to sit by the window and watch for the little man with a round tummy.
Oh, I thought you had to get your husband then.
Oh. Merry Christmas, Aggie.
Ready to go up the ladder now, Dad?
Yeah, hold it steady. Oh, and Barbara, hand me that star again, will you, honey?
Here you are, Daddy.
Mm. Hey, this thing is a puny star. Really, Phoebe, you should have bought a bigger star or a smaller tree.
Well, it was the last star they had in the store. It'll look all right when you put it right on top of the tree.
Oh, here?
No, higher.
Here?
No, higher.
Here?
Yes!
Ouch!
Now, where am I going to find another star?
Take your choice. I can see millions.
Ben Lyon, Bebe Daniels, who burnt herself so hard in writing that show that it eventually gave her the same sort of breakdown Spike Milligan got from The Goons. With Richard and Barbara Lyon and Molly Weir, Life with the Lyon. Subject of a momentary takeoff, and you've got to be quick to catch it, in this catch-all edition of The Goons, the bandit of Sherwood Forest.
But we must escape!
Robin, you pull the stone out. Let's go through. To freedom. Follow me. Oh, it's dark in here. Oh, Robin, here.
Not me.
Then who else?
There's more than one prisoner in here.
Here's the Noble Echo. What are you doing here?
It's lunch.
You captain fool.
It's the sheriff.
Yes, I've come to take you, maid, madam.
Captain Howie Blung Thud Biff. Blap, wallop, blam, black cockle. There. That's the Latin to you. Blap, blap.
You silly, twisted boy. Come, maid. Who blew my candle out?
Oh.
Don't move, sheriff. All this club will match your nugglers.
Be fire, Bolton. Let's get sheriff of it. Black, black, black.
Now, you swine, have you had enough?
Yep, I don't know.
Echo, where's the sheriff?
I've got him on a throat. Cut me.
No.
Why not?
My throat. Suddenly knackered with clubs. He's got away with me, not him.
Ooh.
I'll get it, baby. Hello? It's for you.
Hello? Hello?
Hello,
Robin Hood here.
Rival radio show was wrapped up in that, notably Maury and Dudley of In All Directions, one of whose close relations was parodied over the phone there by Peter Sellers. The girl, incidentally, rare in Goonland, was Charlotte Mitchell. Maury and Dudley themselves broke up not long after, and Peter Jones took Dudley on into We're in Business with Harry Worth.
I'm off.
But don't forget, Mr. Watt, give her the bus off and get rid of her as soon as you can. Don't even let her in.
Well, you know, you convinced me. If she's as bad as you say she is, she'll get no change out of me.
She won't bother about change. It's the folding money she's after. Now, let me greet you. As soon as she gets to the door, she'll say, I know this old. She'll say, could you direct me to a nice, respectable hotel for gentle women in reduced circumstances? Now, that is when you say, I know a smashing hotel in the north of Scotland. Get moving.
Let me try that. North of Scotland, get moving. Right, you can rely on me. That
oh, she does sound a shocker. Yeah. A heightened, hard, calculating old lady. I hope I'm not here when she arrives.
Then come on quick. There's probably a taxi drawing up outside now.
Oh.
We might just make it if we staff her down the back stairs. Cheerio, Mr. Work. Come on, Edie.
All right, get
out. Well, goodbye, Edie and Mr. Grover. You can leave it to me. My word, that was quick for an old lady. Now, look here. You don't want your thought around here. Scram!
Excuse me. Is little Daddy Grosvenor in our Miss Old Granny?
Oh, I see. It's well, sister, won't you come in?
Oh, thank you. Yes. I brought my grandson a little present. I know he always used to like them. Here, you keep them for him.
My good gracious. Jelly babies. You see, what a lovely thought.
Yes, wasn't it?
Yes.
There's one born every minute. What's your name, young man?
Worth, Harry Worth.
May I call you Harry?
Of course, I do say Harry.
Oh, that's lovely. Yes. Now, Harry, I wonder, could you direct me to a nice, acceptable hotel for gentlewomen in reduced circumstances?
Yes, I know one in the north of Scotland. Get moving.
I'm sorry. My old ears are beginning to let me down. You'll have to speak up a bit, dear.
Well, I said I know one in the north of Scotland.
Didn't you say something else?
Yes, I'm afraid yes. Get moving.
He said just move in.
No.
Irene Hansel, of course, as Granny. By the time We're in Business was in business, the comedy field was opening up to a new post-goon freedom in which scarcely anything was sacred. Especially not the staff announcers of the BBC.
Well, go on then, announce the program.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry, I'm finished. You don't mind if I carry on.
Ladies and gentlemen, whatever happens during the next 30 minutes will certainly be beyond our ken.
The new vehicle for Wing Commander Kenneth Horne, who sounded more than ever like the managing director who left the whoopee cushion in the boardroom. Because the cast voices were so splendidly different, I don't think many people at the time connected beyond our ken with the goon tradition. But certainly a lot had been learnt from Milligan's script. For example...
Oh, my head!
Now, look here, sir. I've got the very thing for you. There, you just drink this.
What is it?
Vodka and tomato juice. Now, go on, drink it up.
Oh, and here we go. I think you put too much tomato juice in it.
In incidentally, the explosion count in 50s comedy, one way or another, would be quite colossal. Thank goodness the generation traumatized by gunnery and bombing found that way of working off the agony. But there were plenty of listeners, and still are, who would rather their ear was soothed than battered. And for them, there were a number of top-class solo artists at work. Not so much acts like the ones featured in Variety and the still-running Workers' Playtime, more studio monologuists working without audience, but with rather pointed scripts.
Hello, Miss Moss. Well, let's see if I can be of use to you. Now, girls, first of all, a letter from Wilking. I am at my wit's end. In my wee den, I have a cozy corner where I keep what I like to call my farmyard family in a cozy corner cupboard. Here I have made homes for my collection of tiny doggies and a nest full of fur-coon birds. But, and here is the burning question, what can I put atop my cozy corner cupboard to add the final touch? I've tried a photo of a friend, but I feel it wants something different. Help, help, cordially yours, Ethel B. Spring. Well, first of all, Ethel, thanks for a very cheery letter. How about a china hobgoblin to preside over the rest of your farmyard family? Or a comic horse in dust pottery? They're awfully laughable, I think. I leave the final decision to you.
Joyce Grenfell, who was quite right in judging that there was no longer really a radio comedy format into which she'd fit. She was better off alone. The tradition of the humorous talk was still strong, too. It's almost completely defunct now, probably because it's a very difficult form to make work. You almost had to have one of those very dry, ironic clubman's voices that makes outrageous situations seem completely normal and even a bit tiresome. One of the masters of the form, here discoursing on one of his typical domestic topics, how to press trousers, was Basil Boothroyd.
Now, it's essential that trousers for pressing aren't too far gone. You need some trace of the crease to go at. It's no good making a guess and dashing off at random. You'll end up with one leg creased round the side like a Turkish cigarette, and the other one 3 inches shorter because you've missed it altogether. And one thing you must be prepared for when pressing trousers is the persistent illusion that they have three legs. The one you've done and can't find, and the other two. If you've ever washed a shirt, you'll have noticed the same kind of thing, only the other way round. Once you get a shirt well and truly in the water, you'll find it's only got one sleeve. And the other one doesn't show up again until the shirt's dry and you're wearing it, and then you spot it, and of course it's filthy.
Basil Boothroyd, J.B. Boothroyd of Punch on Trousers. At the Punch Lunch, I once told him I particularly enjoyed a talk of his many years ago about things left on top of wardrobes. Oh dear, he said in a peculiarly Eeyore-like tone. I'm afraid that does sound like me. But towards the end of the 50s now, with slots for comedy shows so firmly established in the schedules that license bearers would have been shocked to hear anything else at those times, there was a need for good, solid, long-running series that could be called upon season after season to deliver the goods. This, one of the most boisterous, ran for 18 years.
Blow the man down.
Mr. Phillips.
Huh?
If you're the man, they should have blown you up, not that. Mr. Phillips.
Sir?
Will you get cartridge underway at once?
Sorry, sir. Rather, sir. I'll tell you, sir. Pull the head.
Pull the head, sir!
Stop engine.
Stop engine, sir!
Now, how did I do that? Jimbo, Mr. Phillips, you will need it to cast off aft. Clumsy.
The Navy Lark, one of the BBC's Harvey perennials. Never much championed by intellectual critics, but brought back for the best part of 2 decades by popular demand and its own momentum. By the time a show gets that old, of course, it can expect to be stamped up rotten by all the upstarts around it. Here's Beyond Our Ken, making hay with a vintage serial, and showing that there was still a healthy resistance among British funny men to that old American influence.
This is the BBC Life Program. We present another gripping installment of... The Archers.
A tale of simple country folk.
This story you are about to hear is true. Only the fat stock prices have been changed to mislead the income tax collector.
My name is Archer, Dan Archer. I'm a farmer. Wednesday, May 1st, me and my assistant were working in the field on our usual beet, the sugar beet. We tied up all the loose ends and we were taking a shortcut across the field of corn when an emergency call came through. Hello, Archer. Yeah. Okay. We've got to get back right away. Something's cropped up. Okay. I questioned the milkmaid.
She didn't know much.
She does now.
When a show like that was at its boisterous best, you couldn't ask for anything more. Unless you were one of those late 50s bohemians who were beginning to worry about things, feeling that honest vulgarity wasn't enough and the world of ideas was passing you by. Bolton and Simpson unerringly recognized Hancock as one of those. So by the time his last radio series came round, Anthony Aloysius was presenting himself as a trainee intellectual.
We are not layabouts. We are artists, mush. Writers, poets, thinkers, all men who are seriously perturbed about the state of the world at the moment.
And what are you lot going to do about it?
We are going to show the world the real truth by setting them an example, developing our superior intellect. Culture, mate. That's where the hope of the world lies. And a more cultural mob than us you wouldn't find outside the Chelsea embankment. 27 throbbing intellects, raring to go.
Can I join?
No, you can't. This isn't a ping-pong and darts club. This is a group with lofty ideals, a cultural and discussion group dedicated to the betterment of mankind.
Well, why can't he join them? He's mankind.
Well, loosely, yes. Only up to a point. He's not far enough advanced for us.
You said it was for the betterment of mankind?
Yes, but tell me, you've got to have something to start on.
The rise at the turn of the 60s of a university-educated generation who actually knew a bit about intellectual topics, or thought they did, was to create a sort of split in comedy between those educated at the universities of life and war and the young totty-nosed lot with grants and degrees. In his TV work, Hancock was to emerge even more clearly as a tortured autodidact who'd have liked to be a student. We'll hear more about that conflict of generations in our next program. The pity was that the young generation had an enormous respect and affection for the old. How could they not when it had produced comic scenes of this brilliance? The perfect demonstration that a show about idiots could fascinate listening brains of all capacities. So, goodbye till next time. Whatever time that is.
What time is it, Echo?
Oh, just a minute. I got it written down here on a piece of paper. A nice man wrote the time down for me this morning.
Oh. Then why do you carry it around with you, Echo?
Well, anybody ask me that time? I can show it to them.
Wait a minute, Deckers, my good man.
What is it, Polly?
It's written on this bit of paper. What is 8 o'clock, she's written.
I know that, my good fellow. That's right. When I asked a fellow to write it down, it was 8 o'clock.
Well, then, supposing when somebody asks you the time, it isn't 8 o'clock.
Oh, then I don't show up at them.
And at this very time next week, the story of radio comedy leaves the main road leading into the 60s to catch up on what has been happening on the Home Services regional output in the company of Norman Evans, Gladys Morgan, Jimmy Logan and Stanley Baxter. Radio Fun is written and presented by Russell Davies and produced by Neil Cargill.